Wisconsin. You're listening to Raised in Wisco. I'm your host, Joel Clayfish. Alongside me is Danielle Fairman.
Hello.
Throughout the great state of Wisconsin on your civic media station. Holy cow. It's very fitting we have some headbanging music to come into today because I'm banging my head happy. You know, a lot of people listen to that headbanging stuff and they're like, oh, I can't listen to it. It's so depressing. That stuff gets me so fired up.
It gets me pumped up, ready to go.
I get jacked and I am so jacked because right now, if you could see the hair on my arms, it's standing.
Yeah, and there's a lot of it.
And look at how buff those arms are getting, Danielle, from my workouts.
Super buff.
I'm getting so buff and
so
tan. Holy cow. World, try to stop me. Tomorrow is the opening of turkey hunting season in the state of Wisconsin. And.
Oh, what?
Well, something I kind of want to talk about. We're in a dawn of a new age right now. The new opening day for turkey season, the new opening of turkey season is pretty much the youth hunt. And it is having exactly the effect that we wanted to have when we, you know, back when I was in the legislature, we authored the bill to allow youth to hunt at any age, first of all. You didn't have to wait till you're 12, which is a great thing. Let a parent decide.
Oh, absolutely.
Look, nobody's out there with a kid in a stroller and a gun, okay?
No.
I mean,
definitely
look,
not.
I mean, okay.
Well, those little backpacks that they have for the kids, though, that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, those that is pretty sweet. I mean, I still wouldn't, I mean, maybe a 410 at four. I don't know. Probably not, though. Not for me. All I'm saying is it's a parent's decision when they should be able to take their kid out there as long as they're instructed well, because I think there are going to be some 7, 8, 9-year-olds who are responsible enough and they're ready to hunt. And then there are going to be some 12, 13, 14-year-olds who aren't ready to hunt. They're not ready to go out in the field with a gun because they're not responsible. That's up to the parent to decide. What I can tell you is that if you take all of the youth hunting, all of the mentored hunting per person, per capita, there's a far lower incidence of accident or violence or incidents with firearms among that group than there is among the standard hunters who have their license and went through hunter safety. So think about that.
Why do you think that is? Because they're just being more responsible? Because the newer you are, the more aware of everything you are, and the more you want to do good and follow the rules. And then just like for work for me, the newbies, the apprentices, we do everything. They do everything to book how
by
it's supposed
book.
To be.
Yeah.
But then other people are just like,
I think that's,
I know how to do this.
I think it's a combination of that. And I think the responsibility when a kid goes and handles a firearm for the first time and goes into the woods and realizes that he is going to have the weight of taking a life on his hands, I think he takes that very seriously. And I think some of the folks, I don't want to put myself in that category because I hope that it's not me, but I think some people who've been hunting for a while and they're just grabbing the gun every year and they went through hunter safety, you know, eons ago, I think they get, maybe there's a little bit of error in complacency. I think maybe you get a little bit used to it. You get a little familiar with it. And I think once you're familiar with it, sometimes you forget the basics.
Yep.
So, you know, I guess, let's just use this as a reminder to be safe, everybody out there.
Absolutely.
Because to me, turkey hunting is one of the most exciting things that I live for. I mean, there's nothing better on earth than when a Tom's coming into the decoys and they're trying to pummel your decoy and you can jellyhead them at 15 yards. That is so exciting to me and it's so fun. But I'm also excited, you know, about the number of people. You know, you've got guys at work looking to see if they have buddies who have kids. These are kids who have never been exposed to hunting, and they're getting an opportunity to get that exposure where they never would have had it before.
Mm-hmm.
Never. And so now there is, so you'll get criticism of it. You'll say, well, some of the adults are shooting those birds. Well, look, I don't care what law you put in place. Violators are going to violate. People are going to cheat the system no matter what the system is. And if you're taking a kid out and you're shooting the bird instead, well, shame on you. Well, I don't want the kid to miss. Missing is part of hunting.
That's learning. You learn by your mistakes. Like, everybody has made a mistake out hunting. Missing the bird, missing the deer, missing something. Like, that's how you learn.
That's
why you practice.
I never missed.
Oh, you never missed.
Well, I'm just kidding. I miss a lot. There's not a hunter.
You missed that joke.
There's not a successful hunter who hasn't missed. And that's part of it. And all I have to say is I honestly don't think it happens a lot. I don't think there are a lot of adults taking kids out there and then shooting the bird for them.
And it's always those people that just think negative. they have a negative outlook on everything. So they're going to think people are breaking the rules because they're not out doing it, and they're going to be all
but again,
butthurt.
This is why I've always supported fewer regulations, fewer heavy hand for the DNR, you know, less of a heavy hand by the DNR. Let people exercise their rights, and especially, you know, if you have a property, you know, I don't know. I'm going to start sounding like a libertarian. Anya. Anya's back there. She's getting nervous. This is my only libertarian streak. My only libertarian streak, really. My only one. I'm not actually, I mean, I'm pretty much of a moderate, to be honest with you. I'm fairly moderate, slightly conservative. But when it comes to your own property that you've toiled for, you should be able to do a lot of what you want on your own property.
Oh, absolutely.
That's just my opinion. But, you know, we've got some silly rules in Wisconsin, like you can't bait for coyotes. Well, you can kill them every day of the year. Why can't you bait for them? Why can't you throw a meat pile out there and shoot 20 of them in one night?
That'd be nice.
That predator,
that would help a lot.
The predators in Wisconsin, the wolf population, the coyote population, they're out of control. It's out of control. Mm-hmm. They're eating deer and turkeys and, you know, I don't know. But that's a topic for a different show. So I'm super excited. And everybody, congrats to all the kids who got out there. Congrats to all the adults who took them. You know, some turkey patterns have been screwed up, some thrown off. There are a lot of birds that were taken. A lot of fields were, you know, are not going to be pristine on opening day because of the youth hunt. That makes me happy because those kids are getting out there and they're getting an experience that they could never have had.
Mm-hmm.
I'm, you know, we usually wait to the second segment to bring our guest in, but I'm so excited. We got Paul House here. Now, Paul House is literally the whitetail master of the state of Wisconsin. I'm not even joking about that. If there is a professor who's got a PhD in the science of killing massive whitetails, it's Paul House. And I don't know, because I will sit and listen to him talk, and I'm telling you something. I can't believe he's been quiet this whole time so far, because he talks just about as much as I do.
I just want to say that was a nice introduction.
Very.
Of you for him, because I would be like, he's the guru of whitetail.
The guru.
That's all I got is guru.
He's
the wonder,
about PhD, but I'll take the guru.
Of whitetail. He's the ambassador of antlers. He's the the czar of, I don't know, xylophones. That has nothing to do with deer.
Well, I appreciate that.
He's the master when it comes to whitetail. And what is so amazing to me, I will sit and listen to him talk and talk. And I sit there and I just try to absorb through osmosis because it's coming at me too fast. He has it down to a science. And that's, you know, one of the things that I want to talk to Paul about, because I think, you know, you used to be a turkey hunter, Paul.
Very much so, yes.
But is it fair to say, talk right up on the mic.
Yep.
Is it fair to say that your passion and drive for whitetail hunting has kind of almost even pushed out some of the other types of hunting, and that's why
probably.
You concentrate on it so much?
Yep, absolutely. Between the deer hunting, whitetail hunting, and then predator hunting is one of my new passions that I've found has been a huge, huge tool in order to control the predators so they're not taking out all of our whitetails and stuff like that on our properties because they've gotten so out of control.
Yeah, we were talking before the show even started, and you were showing me pictures, and I did not even think about how important it is to hunt the predators right now before deer season even starts, before you even start planting your fields and everything, which I'm sure you probably already have.
No, I haven't planted the fields yet.
Because
so
we had
right,
snow like 2 weeks
right.
ago.
We're
exactly.
going to I'd like to save that to section two, because I want to go through what you should be doing to prep
Please stay
for deer
tuned.
Season on section two. But I want to finish off. We've got only about 3.5 minutes left. So I want in this section, I want to talk about, because I'm sure Danielle is, and I'm interested in this, how do predators play a role with the other ecosystems that are out there? Deer, turkeys, rabbits, squirrels. I mean, these are all huntable food sources in Wisconsin that are being absolutely decimated. Or are they? Or is that a myth?
Well, I guess there's some truth to that and some not. Everything based on, you know, your geographical areas, right? So if you have a super, super high deer population, it's probably better to let the natural predators help you control that herd, right? Because right now, all the male coyotes, all the kits have been born, all the male coyotes are out hunting constantly all day long. In the last 7 to 8 days, I have had over 20 daytime pictures of male coyotes out running.
Wow.
And So they'll run, they'll find something to eat, then they'll bring it back, drop it off to the den,
they
go back
really
out
do
and
that.
Hunt
so
again.
They 100%. Take care of the den.
100%.
I mean,
they are the, they're the
rare.
Grocery store.
That is very store. Rare like in wild populations where the male is the provider of the food. Yep. I mean, lions, it's the female lion that provides the food that hunts for the den. And so you see them actively out hunting because they're creating a food source for all of the kits that are
yep.
the new the
That's
new
why you, when I'd be out turkey hunting all the time, I would call in so many coyotes just calling for turkeys, especially if I'm yep. in the really thick cover. All of a sudden, man, you have a coyote coming in hot on you.
Wow.
That does remind me. I have seen so many coyotes when I was out turkey hunting for spring. Yeah. So
you
many.
Betcha. And that's why.
I had a coyote knock over my decoy once.
Oh, really?
He came in right, knocked over. It was, I had a coyote knock over a decoy and had an owl fly out and knock my Jake right off the stake and ruin my turkey hunt.
I mean.
Yeah, they're good for that.
Yeah, that was the worst. Because then you can't sneak out to put it on. You got turkeys in the field, but they're not going to come to your decoy
exactly.
anyway.
Exactly.
Because it's tipped over on the ground sideways.
From an owl.
Looks yeah, like we've had owls take our decoys when we're out coyote hunting at night. We'll be running the thermals, and all of a sudden you'll see something out of the corner of your eye coming, and they'll grab the decoy and take off with it. Never see it again.
That's a disappointment for the owl then.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
So, what are you?
Oh boy,
Paul's a little bit like me. When once we latch on to something, get out of town, get out of the way, and nothing in our wallet is safe. That's all I really have to
good
say.
Good point.
Because you started getting into coyote hunting, and this is so funny because my wife always gets mad at me when I say yotes or yotes.
Yep.
Like she's like, oh, quit saying that. Sounds so dorky. They're coyotes. I'm like, nobody calls them coyotes anymore.
No.
Like, this is like, there's some words that have just changed. Like, remember we went through a period in like the 80s and 90s where we called harassment. That was a weird one. But coyote, they were
that's
always
the one
coyote.
That sticks out.
Or dogs. We call them dogs
but
now.
But it was coyote forever, and now it's coyote.
Yep.
I don't know why that changed.
Or in the predator world, we all call them dogs, you know? That's no, kind of the
I
thing
could about. Not call them that.
Dirty
look
dogs.
Look at my beautiful dog behind you.
When we come back, we got Danielle Fairman alongside. Paul House is our guest today, and Josh is in the house. You're going to learn who Josh is because we got a new something to tease Danielle about. We'll be right back. I'm Raised in Wisco. Welcome back to Raised in Wisco. I'm your host, Joel Clayfish. Danielle Fairman's on my side.
Hello. What? Okay, what?
Josh Belsky is here. Oh my gosh. Anya, she's giddy like a schoolgirl in here.
Yay.
Well, okay. Before we get into Josh Belsky, Anya, what is your take when you listen to us talking about like the predator control and the coyotes as a person who's not necessarily into hunting.
Sure.
But open to the outdoors and spending time in the outdoors. You know, what's a person who's not into hunting's kind of take on predator versus deer versus prey and that kind of thing? Because the populations of coyotes are growing so fast that they're now attacking domestic dogs and they're in cities and suburban areas.
Yeah, I remember growing up in Wausau and my best friend Josie, her family had a goat farm just outside of Wausau. And we would sometimes sit in her car to just chat, and we'd see coyotes walking by because that was where we could sit outside that the coyotes wouldn't get to us was the car. So for me, I appreciate why parts of the population have to be brought down. I worry with what you were talking about, like putting out meat for them, that what if that would attract coyotes to a place where they weren't before? But I also get, you know, oh, hi, Bandit. I also get why you would want to work on bringing those numbers down.
Well, yeah. I mean, and I think for people who bait, they are trying to draw them to an area so that they can, you know,
yeah,
control populations. But I also see the point that, you know, if you're baiting right next to your neighbors and your neighbor's yeah. got pets.
Oh, yeah.
I think
if
that
I
could
the
be a problem. We live on a farm, so we see coyotes.
Yeah.
And we have neighbor pets. And, we, you know, the neighbor's got some semi-domesticated cats. which, by the way, feral cats are one of the biggest consumers of small turkeys and turkey eggs. Domestic feral cat, or not domestic.
Nobody likes cats anyways.
Well, now
and coyotes' favorite food
is a cat.
Oh, God, yeah, they love cats.
Huh. Really?
Oh, yeah, I've got a few pictures of coyotes with cats in their mouth over
the last
5 years.
I would cry a little bit if I saw that. Oh, yeah. Not going to lie.
Mm-hmm. Now, that is the quintessential dog versus cat, isn't it, right there?
Especially on my farm. They drive down, people drive down the dead-end road and drop off the cats.
They do not. Oh.
They do. Well, that's why, I don't know if you saw, there was a cat there today, black and white
horrible
one.
Horrible people.
That one, somebody just dropped off here recently, too. That thing will. I actually have one of the cats. I walked out to the farm, checking the trail camera. This thing comes running out of the grass after me. I just about fill my pants. The thing runs up my leg and sits on my shoulder.
That is now your cat.
It's now my favorite cat.
You should call him Monkey.
No, call him Shop Kitty. Because that's the only thing I named him. But yeah, it's been my, that thing just loves me. I'll pull in the driveway. It'll be wherever it is on the property. It'll just come running up as fast as it can like a dog. It's crazy.
My wonderful dog
is terrified of cats. Terrified.
Really?
Tail between legs.
I'm terrified
screeching.
Of cats.
What?
I am terrified of cats. I
do tell.
No offense, I do not like cats. I am highly allergic to cats. So if I'm in a house with a cat, my eyes are running. I'm all stuffed up. My eyes are itchy. If I touch something that a cat has been on, my eyes are itchy and closed shut, and I'm stuffy all night. Outside of that, the most recurring dream I've ever had in my life is a cat biting me through the fleshy part between your thumb and your forefinger. It's recurring dream. I've had this dream all my life.
Do you turn into
over
Catman?
And over, bite me through that fleshy part and then tear it open, and then it gets infected and I get a systemic infection and die.
How
in
long
my
dream?
Dream?
Really?
You dream for hours and hours, man? Jeez.
No, I think there's little parts
really
of it that
short
happen
infection.
Over time. There's little parts of it that like will happen. It will continue.
Oh, it's
but
not
that
just
was
a recurring dream.
It's a recurring
series.
Dream that is a series. Horrifying. It's kind of like those vampire books where there's series of them.
Oh, yes, most definitely.
So I've always had this like innate subconscious fear of cats. And so when I first ran for office, I was knocking on doors and I got bit twice by dogs. You go, there'll be a sign. This is famous. This happened in, I don't know what it is about Watertown, but in Watertown, they have... Very often on the front door, it'll say, please go to the back door. Meaning, like, I don't know why. They got a camera, maybe, who knows. And I would go to the back door, and inevitably, there'd be a dog there on a leash at the back door. And I got bit. And it's always the little ones that bite you.
Always.
I'm
little
telling
cat dogs.
You.
The little cat dogs.
But purse I dogs. Did have a scenario where I was bit by a cat. The cat ran out and grabbed onto my leg with its teeth, and I was shaking the cat. And the cat's playing. I didn't want to hurt the cat, so I'm slow motion shaking my leg back and forth, and the cat's doing a whoosh, 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 whoosh. And I'm reliving this dream, like this thing's going to crawl up my leg and bite my hand in the soft tissue. Finally, years and years of this nightmare of the cat sepsis is coming for me.
I did not know this about you. I've known you forever.
That is so funny.
I will fantastic. Say this, though. I did have the fortune of going with Senator Rob Stashelt, who's been a guest on the show before. And I went bobcat hunting. And ooh. I was able to harvest a beautiful bobcat.
Yes, you were.
And we made the we broiled the tenderloins and served them in a strawberry soy sauce compote. We actually ate it.
Oh. And
so I am 100% convinced this whole eating things is just decided by the culture you live in. And that's it. It has nothing to do with anything else. Like in Korea, they eat dogs. Now, I could never eat a dog.
Nope.
Never, ever eat a dog. But in Canada, horse meat is one of the biggest imported meats that they eat in Canada. They eat horse meat. In Africa, they eat zebra. Very
commonly.
Guinea
pigs are a delicacy in Peru.
I have heard.
Guinea pigs, yeah.
What do they call? Do you know what they call it there? The
no,
food item.
But I've seen them cooked, and it is a little sad to see that that big hamster. I guess
that would be kind of sad to
just
see
a little.
Guinea pig. Now, do they call the loins then guinea pork chops? Then
that'd be cute, teeny guinea tiny pig. Pork chops.
priceless.
Oh,
forgive
man.
Us. Forgive.
They're already a chop of pork. With how tiny they are.
Guinea pigs. Yes, but I'd never eat a guinea pig. But I'm telling you that this the bobcat tenderloin, because you know I'm a believer in if you kill it, eat it, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it tasted just like pork tenderloin. It was absolutely delicious. It was unbelievable.
Interesting.
So I want to move on.
Yeah, I do not want to eat my shop kitty. That's for sure.
No, I'm sure you don't want to eat your shop kitty.
No, don't eat
but
the
I was going down the road of maybe that's why the coyotes consider them such a delicacy.
Could be. Or they're really easy to catch, one of the two, because this time of the year, like you said, is more of the domestic animals get caught this time of the year.
And that does make me sad. I mean, yeah. If you want to get rid of a cat, a pet cat, or you have extra cats, you know, give them to the shelter or donate them to a loving home, because a domestic cat is not going to have a chance in the wild.
No, and my wife actually will. She rescues animals all the time and finds homes for them. So I haven't told her about this one because I thought it was just a fluke, but now I've got him on camera here to last like 8 days in a row, so I know he's dropped there. Off.
Yeah. Isn't that something? Oh, my gosh. 30 seconds. We're coming back and we're talking about prep. I promise we're going to get there. Paul House is in the house. Josh is here, Josh Belsky, the mystery man who Danielle's going to tell us about.
Oh.
Anya, Danielle, Joel, Civic
Spilling
Media,
the beans.
Raised in Wisconsin. We'll be right back. Wisco on your Civic Media stations throughout the great state of Wisconsin. If you listen to Civic Media on
Slayer.
All 13 stations throughout the state,
Slayer.
You can.
Slayer.
Yes, that was Slayer bringing us back. And I'm so thrilled that we had a satanic.
We had like a little mosh pit in here.
I'm thrilled we had a satanic entry back to the
Head
show.
Headbangers Ball.
Great. That's great. We're gonna
put the ADHD in
that's
me.
That's fine. The next break, we're gonna have some music from The Chosen.
The Chosen.
It's
no
a
idea.
Show about Jesus.
Oh, okay. That's nice.
Jesus is my bro, dude.
Me too.
It's a cool
I just
show.
Like headbanging music,
yeah,
though.
I do too. I have to admit, I've been to Motley Crue 3 times. That was awesome. But I over the break, I was saying, I don't care if I ever go to a concert again. I really don't.
I like small concerts, small venues.
I have seen everything from Janet Jackson to Richard Marx to LL Cool J to Motley Crue.
To LL Cool J?
I saw LL Cool J. Ladies Love Cool James. That's what that stands for. Did you know that?
Ladies love
Cool James.
That's nice.
So, yeah, it runs the gamut. We have a mystery guest. Oh, before we get there, you got to check out Civic Media for all your sports needs, your weather needs. Make sure that if you wonder what's going on with the weather, you tune into your local Civic Media station. You'll find out. And local sports and statewide sports, Brewers, Packers, Civic Media is the place to be. And we are blessed and honored to be part of the Civic Media team.
Absolutely.
Here on Raised in Wisco. Recently syndicated throughout the state. So every corner of the state gets to listen to the ridiculousness of Danielle, Anya, and Joel Clayfish.
I like how I was first.
And I like how I outranked you for ridiculousness there. So.
Well, you can consider that kind of a backhanded compliment because I was selling the show and I sold the two of you before me.
Thank
because
you.
I do think at
Thank
the
you.
End of the day, the show is only as good as the people who are on it, so... Wow, that was really deep, wasn't it?
Look at you. Air hug.
But we have a mystery guest in the studio today. And
Bandits?
Danielle's a little more giddy than she usually is on the show.
My palms are sweating.
Which is surprising because that's a
My palms are getting
high
wet.
Bar. Josh Belsky is with us today. Who's Josh, Danielle?
Oh, man. Josh. I can't
wow.
say it.
This is really sad. Josh is Danielle's new boyfriend.
Yes.
And you know it's serious because she brought him to the radio show, Paul.
I know. I see that. Got to introduce her to her father,
we got,
right?
At very least, what is that supposed to mean?
Okay,
I'm not
so,
that old.
Well,
I can't
you know,
be your dad. Maybe your uncle.
Josh Belsky.
Idol, uncle, whatever.
Josh and I are probably close to the same age.
Oh, God.
Well, we at least have to hear how he sounds. Move that mic over for a second.
There you go, man.
We can ask Josh Belsky how bass fishing was this weekend.
Josh, welcome to the show. Welcome to the show. I should say, congratulations/ I'm sorry about your relationship with Danielle, but more congratulations probably.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Yeah.
What do you think of all this?
This is something new for me.
So, it happens a lot.
What's
doesn't
that?
It?
New experiences for Danielle with Danielle. Yeah, I'm going to tell you something. She's very resourceful. She figures out a way to utilize and get to work doing what she loves to do in life. And that is one of the most important things in life, because sitting there and not participating is not an option. But so is this your first time on the radio, Josh?
Absolutely. This is my first time anywhere near this side of the radio. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, oddly enough, you got kind of a radio voice. I'll be honest with you.
I appreciate that.
It's nice and deep. I like it.
I'm not going to go so far as to say you have a face for radio, which is what most people tell me. But you definitely have a voice for radio.
Does that mean you have to come back on then?
I think you should come on. I think we should do some coaching and get him back on here to talk about some
coaching. Yeah, coaching is going to definitely be in order for sure, because I'm kind of freaking out over here. I don't know what I'm doing.
Oh, you're doing great.
I was trying to get him and his son, Luke, to come on the radio to talk about trap shooting, because he is one of the coaches for trap shooting. His son is doing phenomenal at it.
Where do you coach?
Kettle Moraine High School.
Oh, you're kidding. My daughter goes to Kettle Moraine. My daughter's the student body president of Kettle Moraine High School.
We'll have to talk about that later.
Yeah, for sure. Well,
he's sitting there thinking, that student council body president, she's been real mean in class before. Oh,
I don't think so. That okay. I don't
she
think.
Does not have a mean bone in her
true,
body.
And if that's true, I need to hear about it, because little Viper will hear about it. But she doesn't have a mean bone in her body.
No.
She's one of those kids who really likes to include everybody across the board. But
she's a walking ray of sunshine.
I think so. But I'm her dad, so I have to. But on a serious note, that's the fastest growing youth sport is mm-hmm. trap shooting right now.
It's surprisingly huge, especially in Wisconsin and Iowa. Yeah, those are the two biggest states.
You were telling me about that huge tournament where people from all over the world, or is it just all over the U.S. come?
We were talking about the nationals tournament that's out in Ohio. That's through the SCTP.
And how many rounds get shot?
In a week, there's over 3.5 million rounds that go off.
Wow. Now, I have to ask you, do you know Scott Getzka? Does that name ring a bell?
It does not.
He runs up in Merrill, Wisconsin. He runs a lot of the high school trap shooting leagues out of his pheasant farm. They've got a trap course out there and everything. Well, hey, listen, I'm not going to put you on the spot too much. Thank you for coming in. Really nice to meet you, too.
You, too. It was good to be here.
I want to get – how much time we have left in the segment there, Anya?
Oh, this is our longer segment. We've got like –
7 or 8 minutes. Okay, we got 8 minutes left.
You made me do math on air, dude. You made me do math.
You did it a hell of a lot faster than I could do it. I'll tell you that. Thank God Anya keeps this whole kit and caboodle together. I'm telling you. At any given point, this is a little like the Titanic. Half the boat's underwater, and we're just arranging the deck
chairs. And I'm just up top. Hello, everybody.
And Danielle's oblivious to the whole thing, just waving. And
everybody got a fishing pole?
She's off the back end fishing.
Absolutely.
All you got to do is bounce the lure off the iceberg.
Did you see that fish jump? That's awesome.
Paul, why, if we look at everything, as big of a whitetail hunter as you are, right now, I'm bringing it full circle, Danielle.
You are. I'm very proud of you right now.
You've got turkey populations to deal with.
Yep.
Those affect your populations.
Yes.
Predator populations affect your populations.
Yep.
Does small game affect deer populations?
Boy, I don't really notice that as much as I do the, you know, like the turkeys will come in, and especially, you know, in the later in the, you know, winter, you know, get in past season, they'll come in, and if I have green up, they will decimate, and I mean decimate 3-4 acres of beans in a matter of a week.
Jeez.
I never thought about the fact that they're eating deer food source.
Big time. So you got to make sure you mix it up. You got to have some greens. You got to have some greens. So I'll put in, you know, I mean, sometimes I'll leave up 10 acres of soybeans, and that will get my deer through February usually. You know, corn's a little bit different. Unless we have deep snow, they can't reach the ears. So I can do a little bit less on that, but you have to have greens and grain mixed together so they can, you know, eat the grain, go eat the greens. So their digestive systems, they can't just eat corn or just eat beans. It's really unhealthy for the deer. So you have to have that mixture.
And I'm sure they naturally know that. They bounce. Oh, yeah.
I mean, a deer's a browser, right? So even though you had your food sources, like something most people totally overlook, like okay, we're going to go out plant our food plots, this and that, but having natural browse, making sure that you have lots of undergrowth, burning some fields, burning your woods, is things like that to get this natural browse in, because that's 80% or 90% of their diet. They're just constantly walking around eating, right? A deer, they have their main food sources they go to, but especially if they're in their bedding areas, they'll stand up, they'll nibble on things, they'll move around, but you'll watch them, they'll eat twigs, they'll eat leaves, they'll eat all sorts of browse, and that is super important. I think that's the biggest thing most people miss, is how important that is to the health of the deer herd. And if you put, you know, too much food in, also can be a problem, because now you're starting to suck too many deer in, and you have to make sure that your resource can handle that. If you start seeing browse lines on tree lines, when you look down our one farm, when we had a big flood in 2008, all the deer came out of the bottoms of this huge marsh that was, I think it's like 1,600 acres. They all landed on our farm.
Wow. Oh, geez.
And you drive to this day and you can look at all the pine trees that we planted around the whole farm. And mind you, it's 400 and some acres. Everything is a browse line as far as the deer could eat up.
Wow.
Neighbor across the street, same thing. We started a co-op. I did back, 15 years ago. Got all the neighbors together, said, hey, you guys, you know, at first they're like, how can this guy kill all these big deer? He's violating. There's no way. We've been doing this forever and he's killing big ones every year. Well, they were way behind the eight ball on the management thing. So I got everybody together. We started a co-op, put rules in place. Everybody was working together around the area. And within 3 years, we started shooting 180s, 190s, a 220 was shot. Then same thing with that. Then all of a sudden other people started infiltrating the area because of shining, which is one of the biggest things that I would like legislation to ex-nay, because I think it's the worst thing that you could ever do to a deer population. It promotes violation. It promotes a lot of things that I see happen with that. And it's really
talking about shining deer.
Yeah. I think shining deer needs to be alleviated. It's worthless. Buffalo County, I think you can only shine your own property, but, you know, so what happens is you get that, or what happened to this situation, we got everything under control, had just phenomenal buck doe ratios, big deer all over. And we were at like 1600 acres under control. Neighbors, people were shining, starting to offer money to get into other farmers. They were taking the money. And next thing you know, our resource just got completely wiped out. Now we have probably a 20-to-1 buck doe ratio by us. It's sad. We had some of the best genetics and things by there. So thank goodness that I don't hunt around my house anymore.
What are you looking for a buck doe ratio?
I mean, perfect is 1-to-1. It'll never happen. But if you can get, you know, 3, 4, 5-to-1 is reasonable. The higher the doe. So people understand this either, probably, is that when does are in their fawning stages and things, they will push big bucks off of properties. They are so protective of their young, and they want to make sure they have the food source for their young. I have watched them push. When you get too many does and too much fawning happening, they will push the big bucks off the farm. Now, they'll come back during the breeding cycle, but they're not living on your farm. And we have one of my farms, believe it or not, I quit planting food plots, believe it or not, because I had such a doe problem. The only thing I knew what to do is get away, is get rid of the food. And it worked out phenomenal because they spread out. And
so they'll go find it somewhere else.
They will. And I had phenomenal buck habitat there because it was designed for major buck habitat. And since we did that about 5-6 years ago, I mean, in the last 5 years, I've shot in one that's, you know, 170 every single year now since then.
That's insane.
Yeah.
I've seen them on the wall. This is a great time for Josh's question. He had a question before we had the start of the show. And that question is, how do you get neighbors to agree to QDM, quality deer management? How do you get them there in the first place so that everybody in an area has a goal?
Well, the first thing you do is, you, like what I did is I put together a big cookout, right? So invited all the neighbors, you know, food brings people in. No, I didn't. I don't think at that time. Get everybody in there. And then you have the conversation of what the goals are that everybody's looking at, right? So we want kids to make sure they're shooting whatever they want. No restrictions. Unless they want to put their own restrictions on themselves. And I do see some kids that do put restrictions on themselves. But get everybody together and... You know, everybody kind of has to share information, which gets to be a little hard. People get a little bit weird about sharing, you know, trail camera pictures and stuff like that, even though they'll go post on social media about all their big deer, but they won't give their neighbor it. I know it drives me nuts. But if you can do that and get everybody on the same page, and what people don't understand, it doesn't take long. We're talking 2 to 3 years to see major results. A deer, you know, a big mature buck hits his potential between 5 and 7. Obviously, there's exceptions to every rule, but if you can start letting go 2 and 3 year olds within, you know, 2-3 years, man, you're going to have some really, really big deer. And if everybody can work together, people want to shoot meat, shoot your does, right? And make sure you target certain does.
They taste better anyway.
They do.
Are we, okay, we got to go to break already. When we come back, though, I want to talk about the very real potential that Southeast Wisconsin is facing a deer population issue.
Yes.
Because, you know, I authored a bill that allowed for bow hunting in any municipality. Municipality could not forbid it because you've got these pockets of deer developing and they're running into cars, killing people. They're overpopulated. They're starving. And we've got to do something about it. I want to talk about whether you think there are actually deer population issues and what is the best way to address that. We'll be right back on Raising Wisco. Raised in Wisco. I want to know what other show you can go and listen to that Slayer. Different of music coming back in from the bumps. Anya, is there any other show that has that kind of variety of music that
it's
you produce?
It's only the shows I produce.
Perfect.
That's See, that's the right answer. And that is why we can't thank Anya enough. She carries the load for us here and makes sure we don't sound like a bigger lunatics than we are, and we appreciate that very much. We went into the break, and we were talking about shining deer, which is something Paul, who's very, and I kind of realized, and Anya reminded me over the break, everybody might not even know what shining is.
Good point. So there is a law that allows shining deer, which means that you can drive around in a vehicle with a spotlight and shine deer on anybody's property, and the reason why it leads to such issues, I have not seen any benefits. A, you know, especially with all these super, super high-powered lights. I mean, you shine a deer and you can just watch them having issues. And I don't know what the science is about blinding them or whatever. But what we have seen happen with that is, A, you get a lot of violators will actually use that tactic. And we have a huge issue actually just south of me about a mile. I've been working with the DNR. Got in some permission from a few of the people I know down there because we had a lot of issues with that stuff. Guys were shining deer, coming in, shooting them, and then they come back and pick them up. I think they found 3 of them last year.
Oh, geez.
Jeez.
So, of course, you know, when the DNR sets up a sting, they're not real sneaky. At least they weren't over here and everybody knew what they were doing, which is a problem. But anyways, that's besides the point. And then, of course, then you also get that where everybody's like, okay, there's this big, huge deer. They tell everybody else. And either they're trying to get permission, other guys are losing their rights that they might have had a deal, you know, been hunting with a farmer forever. All of a sudden, some guy comes in and offers a bunch of money because he knows there's big deer here. And I know for a prime example, there was a giant found down in the southwest corner of the state, and it was right down by the Avon Bottoms, over 200 some inches. Buddy of mine's cousin found it. I said, do not put that deer anywhere on social media. Put your, you know what, back in your pants and just leave it alone because it will kill you.
I don't know if he can say that.
He can say you know what, but
okay.
That's close
all
to
right.
We can
just
get.
Check. I just want to make sure.
Okay, right. Ego. I meant the ego back in your pants. All right, so
yeah.
So what happened is exactly what I told him was going to happen. And the next thing you know, that deer got discovered. He put it out there.
Oh, no.
He did some TV or some interviews. Next thing you know, all the land around him got bought up and leased by.
Of course.
There's a lot of really, really rich deer hunters out there that don't care. They will go spend whatever they want to. Oh, yeah.
Well, that's honestly a topic for an entire show, I think. And that is whether, you know, what has happened in so many other states is that you can't even hunt because the land is all purchased and it is so expensive to purchase a lease or to even pay to come hunt a day or two days.
Oh, it's insane.
And the last thing we want to do, and that's one of the glories of Wisconsin, we have so much public land.
Yes, we do.
Agreed.
And good public hunting too,
like,
man.
Excellent. If you put your work in on public land in Wisconsin, and I have to say, that is one thing. You can have political philosophies across the board. That is one thing every governor, no matter what stripe, has protected in this state.
And I agree.
I'm very proud of that fact. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a fantastic thing as well. Gosh, we just got a couple minutes left in the show. And I want to talk a little bit about what somebody needs to be doing now if they have a property. Or here's something that's lost a lot of times. People who hunt often have a friend, a couple friends, some farmers who allow them on their land. This has always amazed me. There is no bigger privilege than being able to go on somebody else's property with a deadly firearm.
Correct.
And exercise your right as an American, but to harvest game, to put on the table and for trophy purposes. There's no bigger privilege. And fortunately, in the state of Wisconsin, we still have farmers who allow people to come in and hunt geese in their cornfields, hunt turkeys, hunt deer. What should, number one, what should everybody be doing, whether you're a landowner, whether you have privileges to hunt somewhere, whether you lease some property somewhere, what should you be doing now to make sure the game populations remain at good levels? What do you do now in the months of March, April, May, June?
Well, I mean, if you want to work on, you know, better food source, like I said, do some burns. It's getting about to the end of burning right now, so you're pretty much done. I mean, some of your warm season grass fields and stuff like that.
What does a burn do to the ground?
It regenerates. You get new growth. You take all the old dead organic matter. You burn that up so you get all fresh growth. Wildlife love it. I mean, everything, right? So you have
to... Well, sure, eating a tender shoot's way better than eating a tough one.
Putting in certain food plots, you know, like I said, depending on what kind of a doe buck ratio you have, I've found you put clover fields in, you're giving major food sources to the does and they're fawning. And yes, it's helpful for the bucks, but I also see the does, especially this time of the year, will overtake that food source and the bucks won't be anywhere near it. So, stuff like that. And then of course, you know, too bad we can't use mineral in the state because that would be a very, very great thing to add to the issue. I know they are able to do that in Iowa and some other states. I don't know the whole reasoning behind that.
Yeah, and I'm actually curious. There's so few states you can bait in Wisconsin anymore, but I think in the counties, I should say.
Right.
I think in the counties you can bait, you can use mineral. Is that not true? I'm not sure.
You know, I don't know. We haven't been doing it in so long.
Look it up in the regs. Do not take my, because I've never lived in a baiting county, so I don't even know those rules. I wanted to get to the overpopulation issue. Southeast Wisconsin has become the new Northern Wisconsin. Northern Wisconsin's having its issues because of the wolf population and 100%. The reduction of the herd up there. But we have such a burgeoning population here in Southeast Wisconsin. I know that Danielle, you've been a successful deer hunter more so than ever in the past. I've been a successful deer hunter. I mean, you have to be careful driving home.
Oh, I definitely hit my first deer a month ago now.
I hit my first deer, I hit my third deer about a month ago on my way.
Third.
not a month ago. It was during the last few days of the goose hunting season. I was on my way to goose hunting and I hit a deer in downtown Oconomowoc.
Oh, geez.
So it is something that's happening. It's definitely a topic for the show.
Yes.
What an awesome show.
Yes, it was.
Thank you guys for listening across the state of Wisconsin on your Civic Media stations. Tune into Civic Media to get all you need in weather, sports, entertainment, and of course, thanks for listening to Raised in Wisco. For Paul House, Master Whitetail Hunter.
Thank you
Danielle
for having me.
Danielle Fairman and me, Joel Clayfish. We'll talk to you next week.
I've never seen anything.